Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, sponsored by EarthX, the world's largest environmental experience, and also sponsored by Natural Awakenings magazine. Live your healthiest life on a healthier planet. Now here's your host, Bernice Butler.
Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. We are now at the beginning of our fifth season, and we remain just as excited as ever, if not more so, actually, to help you explore and understand that unbreakable relationship between your health and the health of the planet. Here we look at the hottest topics related to our environment and its sustainability and how they affect your health and wellness. Here are issues like climate change, plastic pollution, extreme weather events, and others will meet up with everyday impacts like allergies and asthma, digestive issues and gut health, cancers, lung, heart issues, and more. So listen in today as we interview experts for today's show on climate change, looking at how is climate change changing our economic future and the role of policy, economics, and individual action. I've titled this series, Harmony in Action, Unveiling the Economic Realities of Climate Change and Your Crucial Role in a Sustainable Future. Now, climate change stands as one of the most urgent challenges of our times. Its profound impact on our economic future is stirring great concern, as it well should, finally. And so in this comprehensive discussion today, we're going to delve into the intersection of climate change and our economy as we consult experts in order to gain insights into the far-reaching effects and the potential role of policy, economics, as well as our individual actions in mitigating climate change's impact. Now, in the ebb and flow of our daily lives, it's very easy to overlook the profound connection between our own economic choices and the health of our planet. But climate change is not just a buzzword in scientific journals, and it's not just a word that's used by researchers and scientists and experts. It's a very, very tangible force that's shaping the world that we all live in and influencing our wallets, our jobs, and our well-being. And so today's discussion aims to try to unravel the economic intricacies of climate change in a way that resonates with everyday folks like ourselves and empowers us to understand the role and take meaningful action. So let's start by considering the cost of doing nothing. Well, as extreme weather events become more frequent, the impact on our communities is felt economically, from the increased insurance premiums to the strain on local services, to the economic fallout, it all hits close to home. Rising temperatures affect crop yields and could therefore alter the prices of the groceries we buy. And by understanding these connections, we can appreciate that the consequences of climate change are not abstract and they're not far off. They have a very direct impact on our everyday lives and our financial well-being. But on a brighter note, embracing sustainable practices isn't just an altruistic endeavor. It's an economic opportunity that's waiting to be seized by all of us. The transition to a greener economy presents jobs in renewable energy, it sparks innovation, and it can indeed, believe it or not, lead to economic growth. So by supporting eco-friendly businesses and demanding sustainable products, then each of us can become agents of change, influencing the market toward more responsible practices. The economic impact, however, transcends sectors and regions, demanding a holistic approach from policymakers, economists, and us as individuals. Now, governments worldwide, though, are indeed, though, pivotal players in addressing the economic consequences of climate change. Policies geared toward curbing greenhouse gas emissions and those that endorse sustainable practices take center stage, and they really should be taking more of a center stage place. Carbon pricing mechanisms, incentives for renewable energy, and regulations targeting emissions from transportation and industry form the backbone of these strategies. And through such initiatives, governments strive not only to reduce the economic impact of climate change, but also to foster sustainable growth and sustainable futures. Economists contribute their expertise by identifying effective policies for emission reduction while minimizing economic cost. Their role involves a meticulous analysis of the cost and the benefits associated with various policy options, charting a course that promotes sustainable growth while mitigating negative economic impacts. And in this collaborative effort, led hopefully by economists, then the economic dimension of climate change becomes a focal point for informed decision-making by governments and by individuals. However, the influence of climate change extends way beyond policymakers and economists. It reaches into the daily lives of each of us as individuals. Our role in addressing the economic impact of climate change is more substantial than you might think. Consumer decisions, from the products we buy to the companies that we support, send potent signals to the marketplace. And so by cultivating mindfulness about our own ecological footprint, about how we contribute to this, represents a collective movement shaping industries towards sustainable practices. Understanding the economic dimensions of climate change does not necessitate an advanced degree in economics. And so today's conversation aims to break down these barriers, making information accessible to everyone. It's an acknowledgement that every dollar spent by each of us is a vote for the world we desire. It's a vote for the world where sustainable practices thrive. And this isn't merely just a discussion. It's also an invitation to be part of a movement. And in this grand tapestry of combating climate change, each of our individual threads matter. Now, this is a lot. But here today to help us explore and unpack some of this are three experts who are going to make us smarter. With us today, we have Angela Betancourt. Angela is with Net Zero. And Net Zero is a nonprofit organization that aims to contribute to the battle against climate change by educating individuals about how they can reduce their own emissions, enabling them to become carbon neutral through supporting carbon offsets, and building a movement that promotes the importance of individuals, businesses, and governments becoming net zero emitters. Welcome, Angela, and did I get all of that right?
Yes, you did, and thank you so much. It's truly a pleasure to be here.
And thank you for making time to join us. Our other guest is Adam Kent. Adam is a senior advisor for the Green Finance Center at the Natural Resources Defense Council, and they are a partner and have been always a partner of Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, and we thank them. Adam works at the intersection of finance and climate with a particular focus on the role housing and community development finance play in creating more equitable and environmentally sustainable economies. Prior to joining the Natural Resources Defense Council, Adam was the deputy director in Washington, D.C. of the Local Initiative Support Corporation, LISS. Welcome, Adam, and thank you so much for joining us today. And did I get all of that right?
Thanks so much, Bernice. It's great to be here and very excited for the conversation.
Thank you for making time to join us. And our other guest is Michael Mann. Dr. Mann is Presidential Distinguished Professor in the Department of Earth and Environmental Science at the University of Pennsylvania, with a secondary appointment in the Annenberg School of Communication. Michael's research focuses on climate science and climate change. Michael has authored more than 200 publications, as well as numerous op-eds and commentaries, and he's author of 5 books, including Dire Predictions, The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, and The New Climate War and Our Fragile Moment. Welcome, Michael, and did I get all of that right?
Thanks. Yes, it's great to be with you, Bernice. There's actually one more book, The Tantrum That Saved the World. It's a children's book that I wrote with a children's author and illustrator about the climate crisis. Wonderful to be with you and the other two panelists here today.
And again, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. And we just have a couple of minutes to go before we go to break, but I'm going to lean in here with Michael because he's going to have to leave us early. So again, we'll kind of start this, Michael. I may have to stop you and we'll continue after the break. But I want to start with you, Michael, by asking you, how do you see climate change influencing global economic systems in the next decade? And what particular or specific sectors or industries do you anticipate being most affected?
Yeah, I thought you did a nice job sort of painting the broad strokes of that in your introduction. Climate is obviously impacting every sector of our society now. Extreme weather events, heat waves, wildfires, floods. The damages now are into the hundreds of billions and even trillions of dollars now when we measure the damage that climate change is doing. So, you know, too often we talk about the cost of action, of doing something about it. But as you alluded to earlier in your comments, the real cost is the cost of inaction, is the cost that these, you know, damaging and deadly extreme weather events are now, you know, the toll that they're now taking. And so, you know, which sectors are hit the hardest? Well, you know, the reinsurance industry in particular, the insurers of the insurance industry are paying out larger and larger premiums because of these hugely costly extreme weather events, the floods, the wildfires, again, the superstorms. And so they are being impacted. But every business now, the interruption of supply chains and distribution systems is impacting everything we do. We're having a more difficult time getting resources to where they need to go because of the challenges brought by climate change. And so there really is no sector that's untouched.
Indeed, indeed. And we're going to go to break now, but I just want to add before I move, in all of those sectors that you mentioned and the issues that they have go right to each of our bottom lines. Thank you. We'll be right back on the other side of the break with these very smart experts who are going to make us smarter. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, the Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, all natural grocers, Central Market, Sunflower Shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Check them out. Our other sponsor is North Haven Gardens, serving the Metroplex since 1951, the most respected horticultural establishment in North Texas, offering gardening and plant education, concierge services, DIY classes, gifts, and more. Check them out at nhg.com. And our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care. Practicing dentistry for over 38 years, non-mercury, with a holistic approach, looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. To today's show on climate change, as we unveil the economic realities of climate change and your individual crucial role in a sustainable future. And we are back with Angela Bettencourt with Net Zero, Adam Kemp with the Natural Resources Defense Council, and Dr. Michael Mann with the University of Pennsylvania. And I want to go back to Michael, who was making us smarter before the break. And you were talking about some of the sectors that are being significantly impacted by climate change. And I know you mentioned the reinsurance industry and a couple of others. But what I want to do is put a little fine point on that, Michael, if we can. And if you would go back and mention those sectors again, but mention how it trickles down to individual pocketbooks.
No, that's right. And we're seeing, for example, it's increasingly costly to build in low-lying areas. And often it's the low-lying flood-prone regions that are inhabited by lower-income families. There's a sort of an environmental justice or climate justice component to this. We saw this in Maui as well with the wildfires that broke out this summer in Maui and destroyed a whole bunch of homes where in the wake of that destruction, you had outside companies coming in and trying to buy up that land for cheap. And so once again, we see there's sort of this this inequity. Those who live in the areas that are most impacted by urban heat, here in Philadelphia, for example, and low-lying regions most prone to coastal flooding. And again, we see that here in Philadelphia. You know, are the people who had the least role in creating this problem and the least wealth and resources to deal with it. And so for the person on the street, obviously there's a direct impact, but that impact is greatest on those who have the least resources to deal with it. And I think that's really important. And I would add one other thing. We all pay, for example, for our military in our taxes. We pay for a military that is increasingly fighting, you know, dangerous foreign wars over a battle that is really over resources, over food and water and land, that are resources that are diminishing because of the impact of climate change. And so, you know, what's happening in the Middle East right now, fundamentally, you know, the conflict in the Middle East, in our fragile moment, I talk about the rise and fall of ancient Mesopotamia 6,000 years ago, and it speaks to the fact that the fight over water, over the precious water resources in the Middle East, has always been a source of instability and conflict there. And we're seeing that right now. And the cost to all of us of that sort of conflict, of war breaking out in the Middle East, the toll that that takes obviously in lives, but also on our economy, is huge.
And Michael, can you connect the dots a little bit and help people understand how the migration and all the issues that we're having in terms of migration or immigration, whichever is the most appropriate word, from Central America on the U.S. is really a story of climate refugees?
It is. And let me tell a cautionary tale, again, out of the book, out of our fragile moment. 4,000 years ago, we saw the first empire, the first true civilization in Mesopotamia collapse because of an abrupt drying event. We think it was probably triggered by a huge volcanic eruption that dried that region for more than a decade. That led to a conflict over diminishing water resources. And get this, there was a wall that was built by the southerners to keep out the northerners. It was called the Repeller of the Ammonites. And it stretched from the Tigris to the Euphrates River. It was built to keep out the northerners, as the southerners wanted to hold on to the precious water resources that
Sounds
they
very
had.
Familiar, that, doesn't it?
If that isn't a cautionary tale for, you know, for today, for what we're seeing today, where, of course, the construction or the, you know, what is in doubt, but still on the table, the construction of a wall at our southern border here in the United States, is really intended to keep out those fleeing a degraded environment, Central America, Mexico. They're witnessing the impacts of climate change. These are climate refugees. And so we talk about history repeating itself. We talk about, you know, those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it. Well, we're seeing history repeat itself. But the challenge today is far greater than the challenge that we saw, for example, in Mesopotamia 4,000 years ago, because it's global. There's no place to go to.
How do we, I've been talking about it for a while, and probably so have you, in terms of the term climate refugees, but how do we get that into the national conversation to make people realize the depth of the issue, as opposed to maybe just going in their silos? And I don't think most people recognize the relationship or the interrelationship on climate and environmental issues.
Yeah, thanks. I've been trying to use this as a sort of a teaching moment. The conflict between Israel and Palestine, one of the fundamental issues is over water, is over access of clean drinking water for the Palestinians. And we can talk about the immediate sort of factors that precipitated the latest conflict, but there is this underlying conflict over water that is driving instability. And so we can't understand the challenges that we face today when it comes to conflict, when it comes to national security, without understanding the role that climate change is already playing. And so if this isn't, you know, a teaching moment for the real threat of climate change, I don't know what is. And I've certainly been doing what I can to insert that into the conversation. I wrote an op-ed for The Hill about the role of water resources in all of this. And so I think we need to use that as context when we talk about the conflicts that are taking place today, multiple conflicts in Ukraine, in our southern border here in the United States, and in the Middle East right now. Fundamentally, these conflicts have as a critical underlying factor the increased stress for resources caused by human-caused climate change.
Also, something else that you said reminds me, you know, Texas and Oklahoma have for a while been at it and suing each other and over water. So I guess the next thing we're going to have is a Texas-Oklahoma war over the Red River, because that's how that seems to have been a source back from the olden days.
Water wars here in the United States. I mean, there are movie directors who have actually been thinking about that as a possible theme of a climate change major motion picture, because it's a possible future, indeed.
It is one that we live here in Texas. Kent, I believe you wanted to weigh in on that?
I think as Michael so eloquently said, I mean, this is impacting every sector of our economy. And ultimately, kind of that means it's impacting your life on a daily basis. And that at NRDC, you know, in the Green Finance Center, we are really focused on the critical role that the financial system plays in addressing climate change. And so in our work at NRDC's Green Finance Center, we really focus on two main pillars of work and how that fits in the financial system. The first one is financial regulation. So these are how regulators set the rules of the road for financial entities like banks or publicly traded companies. And our focus in the financial regulation space is to really hone in on the role climate risk plays in these financial sectors. And our focus in our work there is really on the mandates of these financial regulators. So for instance, the Federal Reserve Bank is a major regulator of banks, and their mandate and mission is to ensure stability in our financial system as well as maximum employment. And our argument to the Fed and other bank regulators is that we are not currently incorporating climate risk into our analysis of banks' balance sheets. Just like we didn't accurately capture the exposed role of subprime mortgages in banks' balance sheets during the Great Recession, we similarly are not doing an appropriate analysis of the role that climate risk and climate change plays on banks' assets.
You guys at NRDC are moving that forward in your advocacy role. How has it been received? Where are you getting with that? What is the Fed telling you?
These are major institutions, and we really think the winning argument is to center our advocacy and our argument around the fundamental mandate of that regulator. So for the Fed, if their job is to ensure financial stability for banks and ensure maximum employment in our economy, they need to be factoring climate risk into their analysis of the financial sector. And so that's really where we center our argument. And to date, the Fed has actually launched a major pilot with five major, some of the largest banks in the world, to kind of stress test their balance sheet based on a certain climate scenario playing
out. Indeed, good. I'm going to go to break. And then I do want to continue on the other side with you to learn more about that. We will be right back on the other side with Adam Kent with the Natural Resources Defense Council and Angela Betancourt with Net Zero, and Michael Mann with the University of Pennsylvania has been with us as well. Thank you. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, to today's show on climate change, as we look at unveiling the economic realities of climate change and your crucial role in sustainable future. And we are back with Adam Kent with the Natural Resources Defense Council and Angela Betancourt with Net Zero and Michael Mann with University of Pennsylvania. Thank you all for being with us, and you really are indeed making us smarter. And so I want to go back to you, Adam. You were telling us about you all, the Natural Resources Defense Council, in your advocacy role working with the Federal Reserve. And right before we had to go to break, you did mention that they were doing some test work with some banks trying to do a stress test. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. And so the Federal Reserve kind of launched an initiative to kind of pilot incorporating kind of impacts of climate change on kind of banks' balance sheets on kind of their functioning. This was a very targeted stress test. So, as environmental advocates, we wanted to see a much more comprehensive analysis. But they are moving. And as you mentioned before, to get major institutions like the Fed to move, it takes a lot of effort. And so basically what they did is they played out a climate change scenario that would potentially impact certain sectors of the market. And they really focused on the housing market, if I'm recalling it correctly, and really tried to see what would the impact be on the banks that they were working with on that. But what we really need is a more comprehensive view. As Michael pointed out, this impacts all sectors, not just the housing sector. It impacts businesses, it impacts small businesses, it impacts our supply chain. And so really what we need to be thinking about is how does climate kind of comprehensively impact our daily lives?
Indeed. And this is the purpose of Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio as well. And one of the things I like to do, and I'll ask you, I'm not sure that you all have collected this information or not yet, but I think it's just very important to sensitize people that we can filter a lot of this information down to what I like to call the pocketbook level. For example, how much is climate change making interest rates increase? How much is climate change, filtering in on the mortgage cost? I think everybody is seeing the increase in grocery prices, and it's all blamed on COVID. But I know from doing this show for 4 years that a lot of that's climate change that's filtered in there as well. Do you have any stats or information on those pocketbook level financial impacts?
I don't have any specific numbers to cite, but I can just talk in a couple of generalities, just building off of your point. I mean, so you mentioned like the cost of housing. Buying a house in Florida right now or in some parts of California, it's really hard for a home buyer to get property insurance now. Major insurers have pulled out of certain markets because of risks posed by climate change. So that's one, housing. You talked a little bit about the price of goods that we've seen, and definitely COVID played a major role in disrupting supply chains. But supply chains are also affected by weather implications, and so we definitely see it there. And then I think kind of another critical one is energy costs. If you are relying on fossil fuels, you are relying on global markets. And as we saw with the start of when Russia invaded Ukraine, energy prices skyrocketed. And so many households are at the whim of major global economic forces that control kind of the burning of fossil fuels. And that's really kind of gets to the second kind of pillar of the Green Finance Center's work, which is really focusing on the financing of clean energy and a more equitable clean energy economy. And there's a critical role that government can play in partnership with private sector to really deliver that. And deploying solar and wind and more distributed renewable energy is a way to not only address energy cost burdens faced by households, but it's a way to gain independence and actually control energy more locally.
And let me go to Angela at this point, because I think she can perhaps talk to us a little bit more about this. And that is, Angela, from where you sit, what are the most significant economic impacts of climate change that you see or you experience from the work that you do?
Well, I think Michael and Adam, you have all alluded to it, right? The economic impacts of climate change are vast and multifaceted. And I think being in South Florida, being in Miami, I can say that one of the direct impacts that I'm seeing are natural disasters, the hurricanes, the floods, the climate change induced disasters that are happening across the country. And climate change is certainly making these storms more powerful. And each year with hurricane season rolling around, we hear a little bit more about it, how we all need to prepare for these storms, but we're seeing the storms increasing in strength. We're seeing them going to places that they typically weren't going to before. We're seeing these hurricanes heading further north now because the waters are getting warmer up the East Coast. And these storms have in the billions of damages that we're seeing. So when we think about the economic impact of climate change, certainly natural disasters is one area where we see that. Then there's a domino effect on agriculture, right? With changing weather patterns, disrupting crop yield and increasing prices. Michael alluded to that in terms of like the supply chain and our agricultural supply chain. So, and certainly here in Florida, where we have very specific type of agricultural landscapes, we are seeing those impacts, economic impacts because of climate change. We also have to consider the cost of adaptation and migration, which involves updating infrastructure to withstand these new climate realities that we have, right? We're seeing, here in Miami, we've seen them have to improve the water pumping system because our communities get flooded so much easier now, right?
Indeed. Let me ask you this, Angela. From the work that you do with carbon offsets, how do the carbon offsets and other strategies incentivize businesses to adopt sustainable practices, or do they?
Yeah, so net zero, and I'll get a little bit more into that, but to answer your question, carbon offsets are, there's a lot of conversation around carbon offsets, right? Not always positive. And I want to say that it's really important that when we talk about carbon offsets, that we talk about quality carbon offsets.
And net I hate to zero, interrupt you. If you can explain to our listeners exactly what carbon offsets are and how they affect their lives and why they should care about carbon offsets.
Sure. So carbon offsets offers individuals and organizations a way to balance out or neutralize, if you will, their carbon footprint by investing in projects that keep carbon, methane gases and carbon gases from entering the atmosphere or remove them from the atmosphere. So, a good example would be if you support a project that is, and this is in our case, a project that's capping abandoned oil wells. Abandoned gas and oil wells release methane into the atmosphere. So when you invest in helping to cap these abandoned wells, thereby keeping these gases from entering the atmosphere, that can be calculated. There are systems that calculations that are used to say, okay, this specific well would have released this much methane into the atmosphere. Because you've invested in that, you can now say, well, I have produced carbon on this side, but because I invested the equivalent of that into this project, I've somewhat neutralized it.
So it would primarily be businesses who invest in this, or are investments as small, right, that they can be entered into at the individual level, or what?
Well, we're seeing there's a lot of conversation about it with these businesses kind of doing this, and there's been a lot of backlash with how businesses have approached it because there's been some questionable issues around the quality and best practices around that. But for individuals, luckily, it's a little bit more straightforward, right? You have a lot of projects on the ground that are doing incredible work in communities around the world that are responsibly measuring and being transparent about how they're offsetting carbon. And as an individual, when you support these projects, then you can feel confident that you are offsetting or neutralizing your own output because you've been investing in these projects that are being responsible and transparent. And that's really key when it comes to carbon offsets, because it's very easy to get lost in a lot of the conversation that's happening right now. Greenwashing is a big thing that's happening right now. And it's happening because the best practices are not being followed. It's being, you know, carbon offsets on the corporate and business level, unfortunately, in some cases, is being used irresponsibly. It's a scapegoat for businesses to say, yeah, we're offsetting, we're planting this and that, and we're doing this, that, and the other. And it's not measurable. It's not being tracked correctly. It's not being accounted for.
And I hate to stop you, but we're going to need to go to break, but we'll come back on the other side, sure, because I think this is important. A lot of people, including myself, have a lot of questions and perhaps not the correct view of carbon offsets and their benefit. Thank you. We'll be right back on the other side to continue this conversation with Adam Kent with the Natural Resources Defense Council and Angela Betancourt with Net Zero. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, the Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, all natural grocers, Central Market, Sunflower Shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Our other sponsor is North Haven Gardens, serving the Metroplex since 1951, the most respected horticultural establishment in North Texas, offering gardening, plant education, concierge services, DIY classes, gifts, and more. Check them out at nhg.com. And our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care, practicing dentistry for over 38 years with a holistic approach, looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. To today's show on climate change, as we look at unveiling the economic realities of climate change and your crucial role in a sustainable future. And we are back with Adam Kent with the Natural Resources Defense Council and Angela Betancourt with Net Zero, and Michael Mann with the University of Pennsylvania has been with us. Thank you all. Now, before the break, Angela was telling us about carbon offsets, and I was telling her about mine and perhaps others' kind of negative opinion of it. And I just am one of these people where I always think when people have a negative opinion of things, it usually starts with them not having information and education about it. So I do want to suss that out a little bit. But Adam, you were wanting to weigh in on that briefly.
Oh, you know, I just wanted to underscore kind of Angela's point on just there are some significant issues in the carbon offset markets in terms of verifying, are you double investing in something that will be double counted? Would it happen anyway if not for your investment? And there's these other kind of very key things that in a more standardized market, investments can kind of be verified. And then my only other just point in terms of how, like, as we think about what it means to you in your daily life, maybe you have some extra money that you could throw that way, but a lot of folks don't necessarily do. But you know what you do have is you have your vote, and you are more than just a consumer in our world. And so your consumption choices definitely matter, but so does your vote. And a lot of these issues that we're talking about today, we can address them if we have the political will to do that. And so just wanted to underscore the role that your vote and democracy can play in addressing climate.
Indeed. And I tell you, in the 4 years we've been doing this show, that comes out more often than not when we ask people, what can ordinary people do in their everyday lives? It's about vote, but it's also about talking about it and educating, because I think that those talking and education have to come prior to the vote, for people to know really how the vote goes. Angela, you wanted to weigh in?
Yeah, and I mean, to Adam's point, just to kind of point out a couple things out there, you know, it's true. Not a lot of people have, you know, you might not be in a situation where you have money to say, well, I'm going to offset my carbon footprint, right? But I think it's important to state that especially with net zero, the focus is on, it is on the individual and individual action. And it's really about saying, okay, carbon offsets are just a small piece of the puzzle, right? It's not the solution, the end all and be all. I think as far as organizations and businesses are concerned, there's a lot of responsibility that that falls on their shoulders. But then I like to think about, well, what can we do as an individual, right? What can we do? And it really starts with the mindset to say, you know what, I want to try to make a bit more of a difference. I want to be a little bit more sustainable in my life. What does that look like for me? And if you're in a place where you're just getting started on your sustainability journey or on a journey to be more eco-friendly, there are so many things that you can do, right? We hear all about, you know, switching out your light bulbs and walking a little bit more when you can and things like that. And I think that if you're a little bit more advanced in your sustainability journey, then as an individual thinking about, is there a project out there that I'm really passionate about, that seems exciting, that's being really responsible and transparent with what they're doing, that's actually having impact? That's the key. Then definitely consider in offsetting your carbon footprint as that next evolutionary step in that journey.
Indeed. You know, what seems to be maybe a good project for net zero too, is to do a community level project that offsets carbon. And that way people get it, because 100%. I tell you, what we see, and again, the whole purpose of Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, is to educate and inform people so they see what's in it for them. And only when they see what's in it for them will they be moved to further action in terms of votes and things like that. So that is the key. But if you could come up with a community level carbon offset, let's say where they're like here in Dallas, a big thing that's happened over many years was getting what we call Shingle Mountain. It was a mountain where they would take the shingles from roofs and things like that and just throw them into, it was like you couldn't see over it, right next to a neighborhood, and it was causing all sorts of things. It's, say somebody developed that into, again, that community level where folks could invest small amounts of money and experience it. Then they could, I think, could truly understand what you mean by carbon offsets. And then they could support and perhaps advocate as well as help drive some of the larger impacting carbon offset projects. But, you know, we I think we'll get there. But I want to move on, though, and go back to Adam. And can you tell us about those, some of the projects and or other ways that the NRDC Finance Center is impacting the economic side of our climate change crisis?
Yeah, I'm happy to. And I mean, I think just to kind of start, like a lot of our conversation today has been focused on a lot of scary things. And climate change is scary, but there are tangible things, as we've talked a little bit about, there are tangible things you can do and we can do as a world to address climate change and create a more equitable and resilient and environmentally sustainable future. And so kind of just thinking about what we've seen recently over the past couple of years, the U.S. passed a very large climate investment legislation called the Inflation Reduction Act, and that has billions of dollars of incentives for individuals, for businesses to start working towards a more equitable clean energy future and transition. And so we're talking about tax credits for businesses to spur electric vehicle manufacturing, solar and wind deployment. We're talking about rebates and incentives households can get. So when your HVAC breaks down in the middle of the summer, you have a discount on a more clean energy and efficient appliance that can get installed in your home. And so, yes, we have a big, big challenge ahead of us and facing us, but we have some kind of unprecedented and historic investments to help give us a kick in the butt to start working in the right direction. And so for kind of maybe one specific example that kind of highlights this, and this really gets at the second part of a lot of our work, which is focused on what we call public finance. And really what that is how are we using limited public dollars and public revenues to spur investment into clean energy technologies and a clean energy transition, and really bring in private investment and business investment into that. And one example that we can just kind of highlight there that I love to highlight is in Connecticut, the Connecticut Green Bank, which is it's an entity that exists to invest in clean energy and other projects that reduce greenhouse gas emissions. They were seeing that there was an inequitable kind of distribution of solar projects in Connecticut. They weren't getting adopted by lower and moderate income households. And they set out and issued an RFP to the business community to say, who has an innovative idea or solution that can spur solar and energy efficiency investments in lower income communities. And what they ended up doing is working with a small business called Posigen, and they used kind of the investment from the Connecticut Green Bank to launch a solar and home improvement program in Connecticut that not only kind of did not look at credit scores, instead looked at other ways to see whether or not a person can pay back an investment. They use community-based marketing, which gets to the point that Angela and you were talking about in terms of like community level. We need to see this. We need to see a tangible improvement in our lives. And they really work to leverage all these different pots of money and resources that existed in Connecticut to deliver improved benefits. And one stat that I just really love out of this program is that almost 40% of their sales in 1 year came from referrals, because families that installed it, that saw their energy bills go down, and the neighbors saw the solar panels on their roof, they wanted to be a part of that as well, and they wanted to see reduced energy costs. And so that's just kind of one example of kind of the work that we're hoping to spur in our country and in our world as we move to a cleaner energy transition.
I want to go to Angela, kind of last word here. We just have like just a minute to go. And that's Angela, last word. You've named a number of things, but what else can ordinary people do in their everyday lives to lessen their climate change economic footprint?
Yeah, so everyone's situation is going to be different and everyone's going to be in a different place. So I would just say is to start with mindfulness and to say, okay, what's realistic for me, right? What is realistic that I can do in my everyday life? You know, you'll see a lot of advice out there about following these, you know, 5-10 things to do, but really it's about your own personal living situation, right? If you can reduce your energy usage, do that. If you can walk instead of driving all of the time, then do that. Even if it's just saying, okay, I'm going to be more mindful about my water usage, then do that, right? There's no right or wrong way. The right way is to make a conscious decision that you want to do at least one small thing to start moving in that direction, right? That's the key, is to just start moving in a more sustainable direction, whatever that means for you. I think for some people, it could be thrifting instead of buying new all the time, right? You don't have to buy new everything. Go down to support your local thrift store, shopping local, supporting small businesses in your own community. All of these types of things will help reduce your carbon footprint.
Indeed, and I think people tend to overlook them because they think they're so small. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you making us smarter. Today we've been with Angela Betancourt with Net Zero, Adam Kent with the Green Finance Center at the National Resources Defense Council, and with Dr. Michael Mann at the University of Pennsylvania. Again, thank you all for making us smarter. And thank you, listeners, for listening in today to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. The conversation starts here, but our goal is for it to continue in your home, in your social circles, in your workplaces, at the water cooler, and in the grocery checkout line, so that we can all work together to realize that healthy living is simply not possible without a healthy planet. Our culture is a result of a trillion tiny acts taken by billions of people every day like yourselves, and each of them can seem insignificant, but all of them add up one way or the other to the change that we each live through. This is your host, Bernice Butler. Thank you for listening today, and join us again next week for more Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. And listen to any of our past shows on podcast wherever you get yours. Thank you.